Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Pretty good game last night, 49ers over the Cardinals, 28-25. And maybe that's going to answer some questions from the people who doubt this team. And I'm not talking about Carolina's Bruce Irvin either, who watched San Francisco put 51 on his defense on Sunday and then told Jim Trotter, quote, "They're okay. They're okay. They're not world beaters." I mean, it's been a few days since I first read that, and I still can't get over how amazing that take is. Like, you give up a half a hundred, and your reaction is, yeah, they're all right. They're not all that. They're not great. The thing is, he's probably not the only one who thinks that. There are probably more Bruce Irvins out there. I can't recall the last time an 8-0 team got so little respect. The last time an 8-0 team had more people saying, yeah, but, like, yeah, they're undefeated, but who have they played? Yeah, well, they've played everybody on their schedule. That's who. That's all they can do. That's all anybody can do. And they've beaten everybody. Yeah, they're undefeated, but they're a defense-first football team. You're right. And that's a bad thing? I mean, have you seen that defense? Have you seen how that front gets pressure, collapses the pocket, and wrecks quarterbacks? But as they showed last night, they can win even when that defense is not rolling. Did you catch Richard Sherman after the game? He sounded like a guy who had just lost the game.
We let us down, you know, myself included. So, you know, it's humbling. It's humbling for the defense. You know, we need to be humble. That was a humbling game. You need to be humbled on all levels. And I think there's accountability on all levels. And we'll watch the tape and we'll watch it critically. And everybody will watch it and judge themselves critically. Because we got to play like that. That's not championship football.
Right, so we're talking about a road win. This is a guy after a road win on a short week. They beat Arizona in Arizona on a short week and in a game where the defense did not play that well. And Arizona did play pretty well. And the leader of the defense is still publicly beating himself up, talking about letting everybody down and being accountable and being humbled. They're 8-0, and he's talking about how they just got humbled. Talking and acting like they just lost. That's a really hungry team. That's a motivated and driven team. And yet there are still people saying, yeah, they're undefeated, but who do they have for weapons in their passing game? What, you mean aside from George Kittle, who's an absolute stud, who played through pain last night to rack up 79 yards and this TD?
Third down and three, 49ers. Kittle going to run the end cut on Baker. Baker stumbled. Kittle made the catch. Kittle in the secondary 10. Runs over a man. Touchdown! San Francisco!
Niners Radio. This guy is a stud. What a fierce run. And when asked about his mentality after the play, the big dude said this.
Just try to be as violent as possible and see if they can match your intensity.
You were, and they couldn't. Good luck to anybody trying to tackle that cat. He's got the speed to run right by, guys, and he's got the strength to put them in the ground if they get in his way. But still, the yeah buts. Yeah, but, yeah, but. Yeah, but who do they have for receivers? Well, they added Emmanuel Sanders, who had a TD in his first game, and then added 112 yards and this last night.
Run up on the ball. Garoppolo under center. Got a quick snap, a play action, throws out. Caught by Emmanuel Sanders! Touchdown! San Francisco!
So this guy just gets to San Francisco, and already he's on the same page, and he's got a really good thing going with Jimmy Garoppolo. Which brings me to another and the ultimate yeah, but. Yeah, but what about their QB1? Yeah, I'm just not sure I totally trust Jimmy Garoppolo. Fine. He knows that. He's heard that. He doesn't care about that.
It doesn't bother me. I mean, most of the people saying this stuff are just, people, so it's their opinion. I don't know. You can't think too much about that stuff, but, it's not going to change who I am as a quarterback.
What? Opinions are like buttholes. Everybody has one. Didn't want any of that. In other words, you can think that. Thank you, Alvy. You can think that. You can have your opinion. But no, on a short week, he went on the road, completed 28 of 37, a career high 4 touchdowns, no INTs, and a passer rating of nearly 137. He was dropping dimes like this one to Dante Pettis. And Pettis was dropping the thriller dance in the end zone.
Kittle is tight left as a wide tight end. They bunch the formation right. Garoppolo looking for Sanders. They take it away. He lobs one down the sideline of the end zone. It is caught for a touchdown by Dante Pettis. Touchdown, San Francisco.
So, on a night where the defense was not clicking, the ground game was banged up, Kyle Shanahan put the game in Jimmy G's hands, and he won it. 12 of 14 for 159 yards and 3 touchdowns on third down. In other words, when it mattered most, James G delivered. But don't take it from me. Ask Kittle.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I don't know why people don't think he is. He makes some pretty gutsy throws out there, doesn't he? Goodness gracious. I mean, I can't say enough about just how he brings us along, you know, just whether it's on the sideline or in the huddle and, you know, the leadership that he has. But, you know, the fire that he, you know, has to just kind of just gets the people going. And just to see him, you know, make those plays and allow him to get those people off his back that, you know, say, hey, maybe he's not, you know, what we think he is. But, you know, everyone in this building or in our locker room knows what he is. It's fun to see that.
I love Kittle. And Kittle doesn't need to get profane to make his point. He can just go, goodness gracious.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
So, yeah, you can but the 49ers all you want. It does not bother them. In fact, it fuels them. They love it. They feed off it. And by the way, the Cardinals are pretty good. They're running ahead of schedule. And with Kyler and Cliff, they've got something going. And they've got a little something for everybody who was hating on them and hoping they'd go 1-15. Believe me, the Niners just did get out of there. Playing them in their house on a Thursday night is exactly the situation where you could lose a game and an undefeated season. So they'll take that and they'll keep moving. But that didn't happen. On a night where they did not play to their biggest strengths, they relied on other strengths and they still won. You don't have to like them. You can question them, but you cannot question the fact that they have beaten everybody in front of them. They're 8-0, and they're fueling up like they're 4-4. And they're not looking for your respect. They're just going to rip it from you. Let's just hope that Bruce's former squad, the Seahawks, give these guys a little more respect than Bruce does. If not, it's going to be a long night, Hawks fan. It's going to be a long night, 12th bag.
Goodness gracious.
Goodness gracious.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Goodness gracious, they're 8-0.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Goodness gracious.
But all the talk that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan were not on the same page, they weren't seeing eye to eye, what's going to happen? 8-0. Devin Bush is my guest. Devin, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good, man. Good to have you. So you're coming off that win over Miami where the defense had a number of huge plays. As a guy from Florida, how much fun was it to be playing in Miami on Monday night against the Dolphins?
We played at Heinz Field. So
yeah, my bad. Exactly. I meant them, though, to play against them.
Nah, it was cool, though, just playing, you know, against the home team and actually being out there in the atmosphere on Monday night. So it was definitely a good one.
Got me on a misspeak. Nice job. Devin Bush joining us on the program. Listen, there is so much talent on that defense. How would you describe the mentality of that Steeler defense and being a part of it?
Yeah, very stout. That's the demeanor we're going with every game is, you know, we're going to challenge these offenses to come in week in and week out and play football. You know, we're not going to give them anything cheap or we're not going to, you know, blow any assignments and beat ourselves. You know, we'd rather you go 100 yards against us, you know, making plays rather than us giving it to you, you know?
Stout's a good word to describe that. You know, defense has always been such an enormous part of the Pittsburgh Steelers. When you know the tradition of toughness and physicality there, what's it mean to you then to be a Steeler and even more specifically to be a Pittsburgh Steeler linebacker?
Yeah, you held to a different standard. Obviously, like you said, man, just the toughness and the, you know, just going out there and knowing that defense is what thrives this team and to go out there and be able to make a statement and set the game off and set the tone right week in and week out. You know, it's a new challenge every week, you know, with whoever you're playing. But at the end of the day, you know, the job is to go out there and be the best defense that day.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Then do not make a shake. Don't grab a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender because it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it goes wherever you go. To the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying that way. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, you got to ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Steelers linebacker Devin Bush, my guest. You know, after that first preseason game, Mike Tomlin said the way you played in that game, quote, was kind of reminiscent of Ryan Shazier's performance in his first home preseason game a number of years ago in terms of production and getting around and making a number of plays, end quote. I mean, that's extremely high praise. What's your reaction when you hear your game compared to Shazier's?
Yeah, definitely high praise to be compared to a guy like Shay. Obviously a Pro Bowler, a great player. And, I mean, it speaks volume. You know, it's on your motivation to keep going, to keep getting better and growing in different areas as the season goes.
You know, he texted you personally after you were drafted to say congrats and to let you know that he's there for you. You're obviously your own guy and you're your own player, but what did it mean to you to have him reach out to you the way he did? And then what was it like to have him around during camp?
It meant a lot. You know, he didn't have to do that. You know, Ryan could be a guy, could be, you know, very selfish, especially in his situation with what he's dealing with. He's like, you know what, I'm focusing on myself and I'm trying to do this for myself. But, you know, he was all in. And, you know, since day one, he's always been in my ear and always been in my back pocket. So, you know, it meant a lot to me to have a guy like that in my corner, you know, that only wants the best for me.
Devin Bush, my guest. I mentioned in the open that you were named the Defensive Player of the Week after that Chargers game, and I'm talking to you right now, and even back then at that time, you sounded pretty matter-of-fact about it, saying, look, I was picked to do a job, so I'm doing my job. How do you make sure as a young guy that you go about approaching that job without trying to do too much when you're doing the job?
Yeah, I think it's a week of preparation. Just knowing what you can and cannot do and learning your assignments during the week and the game plan and getting comfortable with it. And at the end of the day, just flying around, making plays, man, having fun.
You know, a big part of that transition from college to the NFL is learning how to take care of your body, learning how to approach that thing as a job because it's now a job. From the outside, it seems like you've done a really good job of trying to of getting this thing done and figuring it out pretty quickly. What was it like to make that transition and to transition into it being a job?
Yeah, it was a quick transition. It was one you had to learn fast because everybody's good. Everybody's really good. And the thing that makes you really valuable in the NFL is being available. You know, if you can't be reliable if you're always hurt or you're not, you know, performing up to your potential at all times. So having your body right and making sure your body's your main focus is a big part of being a professional.
Hey, when you and I spoke back in January, we were talking about your time at Flanagan High School in Florida. A few weeks back, you were back at school and you had your number retired. Hey, man, I'm no genius, but if I do my math right, 4 years ago, you were playing for Flanagan. You led them to a state championship. Now you're starring for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You had your number retired there. I mean, does that whole thing seem kind of surreal to you, or is this pretty much the way you drew it up and what you expected?
It's surreal. it was surreal. I mean, I never expected to have my jersey retired, you know, so quickly. And, I mean, I think it's just a testament about the legacy I left there, you know, at my high school and the things that we've done there. So, I feel like, you know, I'm just super honored to even have that opportunity.
So what was your time at Flanagan like, and what does that community mean to you personally?
Personally, that community meant a lot to me. Just the people that come in and come out of that area, you know, a lot of people have a lot of potential, especially in sports, coming from South Florida, and a lot of guys that don't have the opportunity to play at the next level and to do the things that, you know, I'm doing now. So to be able to give these younger guys hope and an example and a role model, you know, it means everything. So I'm putting that weight on my shoulders and holding that standard very high for these younger guys to chase their dreams as well and do the same things.
Devin Bush, my guest. Listen, I think that you're a young guy who understands that the main thing is the main thing, and you get that. You're already making an impact on the field, but you're also making an impact because of your style, your sense of style, and also your hair. Like, dude, I'm not in any way disrespecting this. Like, the main thing is the main thing, but you're getting a lot of attention for your hairstyle. How would you describe your hairstyle?
Yeah, it's me. I think my hairstyle kind of describes me. I've never been the regular guy. You know, I've never been the follower. I've never been the, hey, I'm going to do it because he did it. You know, I'm only going to do it because I want to do it and it interests me. So, I mean, my hairstyle is, I think, one of a kind, and it just goes to show that, you know, I'm the guy to go left when everybody's going right.
Let's talk about a common problem that we all share. The one thing that health experts, dietitians, athletes, and top performers all seem to agree upon is the fact that the perfect diet just does not exist. Even with a balanced, healthy diet, it can be tough to cover all your nutritional bases through food alone. This is why there is Athletic Greens. The Athletic Greens Ultimate Daily All-in-One Health Drink has 75 proven vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients, which make it easier for you to get that comprehensive nutrition without the need for multiple pills, powders, or complex routines. It is the most complete supplement for a better you, and it's different from everything else out there. It's different because it's delivered in powder form and it's mixed with water. Athletic Greens then requires less capsules. It has superior absorption and it does not include binders or fillers. One scoop of Athletic Greens provides a convenient, affordable, and tasty solution to fill the gaps in your diet. So if you're looking to boost energy, strengthen your immune system, or support gut health, this is the product for you. Even if you're an athlete or a professional seeking enhanced performance, maybe you travel frequently and you struggle to maintain your routine on the road, then Athletic Greens takes the guesswork out of everyday good health. Give it a shot. Why not try it? Jump on over to athleticgreens.com/Rome. Claim my special offer right now, 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. athleticgreens.com/Rome's. All right, some other NFL news. Let's talk about what's going on in the district. The Washington Nationals win the World Series. That means, in a very brief time, the Nationals, the Capitals, and the Mystics have all won titles. The football team, though, in that city has not. In fact, they haven't come close. And in their quest to keep on failing, the team decided not to move Trent Williams, despite the fact that he's made it clear he has no interest in being there. He's made it really clear he wants nothing to do with them. This week, he finally did report to the team. Yesterday, he met with the media. And of course, the question came up about the nature of his relationship with the organization. He was asked, how would he characterize it? Williams said, quote, there's no trust there. There are some things that happened that are hard to look past, end quote. All right, but how bad are those things? Like, what are those things and how bad can it really be? How badly could a team really treat one of its best players? How bad? Oh, just a cancer diagnosis that he says the team told him was, quote, something minor, end quote. Apparently that bad. I gotta be honest, I'm still trying to kind of wrap my head around this whole story because the entire thing seems so insane. Even by Washington's already insane standards. Washington already had a terrible reputation when it came to their medical staff. But even for the Redskins, this is a new low. In fact, an all-time low if what Williams says is true. Because according to Williams, he first noticed a growth on his head about 6 years ago. He told the medical staff about that growth. According to Williams, they told him it was, quote, something minor, end quote. So he's concerned about it. They tell him it's something minor, except he became more concerned because it kept growing.
I mean, the lump continued to grow over the years. And it was concerning, but it was no pain involved. And, you know, if I'm being told by the very people who, you know, I put my career in the hands of, they're telling me that I'm fine, then I'm fine. You know, that's how I looked at it.
All right, so he's concerned, but the doctors are saying you're fine. It's nothing. It's minor. You're good. It's fine. except he still wanted it dealt with, and says that he even told doctors to remove it during previous surgeries on his knee and thumb. What? How does that work? Hey, doc, I know you're working on my knee. When you're done with my knee, could you also take this thing off my skull real quick? I see the guy working, but this is surgery on your skull. It's not like saying, hey, listen, can you run to the store, get some milk? Oh, and by the way, grab some bread and eggs while you're there. When it comes to surgeries, I'm not looking for a two-for-one deal. But it does show you that he was concerned about it, that he wanted it removed. Then the team doctors examined him again this past offseason, and according to Williams, this time they were concerned.
They kind of underestimated it, and it was far more advanced than they had realized, and I don't think they realized how long it was there.
And this is where it gets really bad. Williams flies to Chicago, and for some reason, some people want you to know that he went there on Dan Snyder's plane. Like, it really matters if what he's saying is true. Or like, that really matters if what he's saying is true. I mean, people literally are saying, no, wait a minute. How did they mishandle this? They're a great organization. They flew him there on the owner's plane. Listen, if the team doctors really did downplay and ignore a tumor on his skull for 6 years, letting him borrow your plane for surgery is not nearly as generous as some of you want to make it sound. Anyway, Williams goes to Chicago for surgery, and it turns out the thing that he allegedly was told that was something minor was a rare form of cancer, and that the growth was removed only weeks before it would have been so much worse.
Told him 5 years ago, but we literally caught it within weeks of it metastasizing through to my brain and to my skull. They extracted it, was the only thing they could do. I mean, doing radiology on it would have, you know, would have put a cap on my life. I think 15 years, I think, is the most I had after I was started chemo. So I had to cut it out.
They had to cut it out. And by cut it out, what he means is he had to have surgery to have the tumor removed from his skull. A surgery that resulted in 350 stitches, 75 staples, and an incision roughly the diameter of a softball.
It was cancer. I had cancer. I had a tumor removed from my skull, attached to my skull. You know, it got pretty serious for a second. I was told some scary things from the doctor, so, you know, it was definitely nothing to play with. It was one of the things that changed your outlook on life.
One of the things that will change your outlook on life, right? Like, having your skull cracked open is going to change your outlook on life. Having your skull cracked open because of cancer is going to change your outlook on life. I mean, I've seen that firsthand. I'll never forget what it was like to see my father right after he had brain surgery as a result of leukemia. And cancer has been a topic on this show a couple of times this week. We had Eddie Owen. We had Minnesota football player Casey O'Brien. And they're both so impressive in how they handled their diagnosis and how they responded to it. But one thing I never heard either one of them say was it was something minor. If anything, they're going in the opposite direction. Get checked early. Find out everything. But according to Williams, this is not how Washington's doctors roll. Can you imagine going through all that and then having to come back to a team with a medical staff that you don't trust? A medical staff who looked at a cancerous growth on your head and told you it was something minor. Imagine having to come back to that facility and that staff and then having to go through a physical with those same people.
A lot of emotions. I'm not going to lie, I said it wasn't. It was a ton of emotions, you know. I almost lost my life.
They even got you a bag.
Like, seriously, like, I almost lost my life. Like, it was no, you're 30 coming off seven straight Pro Bowl and the doctor tell you get your affairs in order, it's not going to sit well with you, you know. And it still doesn't. And it's still, even thinking about it, it's a scary thing to go through, you know. Think of how you can describe your 9-year-old, 5-year-old that, you know, daddy might not be here. So, it's tough.
And this is beyond tough. Being told to get your affairs in order, telling your two daughters that you might not make it, it doesn't get any tougher than that. That's insane. And then on top of all of this, as Williams sees it. The way the team handled the trade deadline only added insult to injury, because even though teams were interested in him, Washington did not really try to actually trade him until it was too late.
I mean, when you give him 48 hours to strike a deal, it's probably not going to happen. You know, and I felt like that was kind of done to try to embarrass me, so to speak, you know, because try to make it feel like, you know, don't nobody wants you, you're not good enough for us to trade for, you know, so I feel like that was more so the play than it was to actually try to get me moved.
Listen, this is what he's saying. I'm not sure whether or not that's exactly how that went down. He just said that there were teams that wanted me, but they waited too long when they knew a deal couldn't be made as a way to kind of keep me down and let me know you're not that good. Nobody really wants you. You got to stay here. I don't know if that's exactly how that went down, but if that is exactly how that went down, that is pure trash. Hey, sorry about that cancer thing. Anyway, nobody wants you anyway, so you've got to stay with us. The team that told you that cancerous lump on your head that almost killed you was, quote, something minor, is now telling you, oh, and by the way, nobody really wants you anyway. You're not that good. This is what he's alleging. If that's how that went down, if Washington's got a hell of a lot of questions that they've got to answer, not the least of which being why they didn't let this guy leave when he wanted to leave. If that's how they handled it all along, if they really downplayed it like that, if they really told him what turned out to be a tumor on his skull was, quote, something minor, then you sure as hell better do whatever the hell that guy wants. You better do whatever he wants when it turns out to be a tumor that was weeks from metastasizing. And even if that's not exactly how that went down, it's how he thinks it went down. So you may as well trade him, because that relationship has been completely obliterated. The team issued a statement yesterday where they called for the NFL's Management Council to convene a joint committee with the NFLPA to review the medical records and the medical care given to Williams. They seem to believe that it's going to reveal a story that's different from the one Williams is telling. Man, it better. It better. The team better be right. They better have a different story. Because I want to believe there is no way it could have possibly have gone down the way Williams is saying it went down. But knowing the Redskins, I would not be shocked. I would not be surprised at all. So I knew it was bad. I had no idea it was that bad. He had his skull cracked open to the tune of 350 stitches. And dozens of staples. And they told him, yeah, it's nothing. It's something minor. Don't worry about that. Yeah, but it keeps growing. Yeah, it's nothing really. Hey, can you look at this one more time? Hey, you got a problem here. Yeah, right. Like I said 5 years ago. Man, they got a bad rep. And it just got a whole lot worse. But Bruce Allen did insist that the culture there is, quote, damn good.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
I don't know, Bruce. Why don't you go ask Kurt Cousins if the culture is damn good? I already know that Trent will tell you that it's not damn good. It's really bad, actually. Kevin Byard is my guest. Kevin, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Jim?
Good. Great, Kevin. Appreciate the visit. So you're coming off a pair of wins against the Chargers and the Bucks, where the defense had one enormous play after another in both games to win it. Kevin, the mantra of the defense or the team has been defend every blade of grass. So how much pride do you take in that attitude, in the ability to defend every blade of grass and shut down an opponent when you have to late in games?
I mean, we take a lot of pride in our defense. We have a very high standard, not only in our defensive back room, but just the entire defense as a whole. We understand, especially early in the year, that our offense wasn't rolling at first, so we kind of understood that, hey, you know, sometimes we're going to have to – we might have to shut a team out. We might have to, you know, only allow a team to score 10 points or how much we were averaging. But these past 2 weeks, my offense has been rolling. So that's been definitely great to see. And, you know, like I said, man, it's all about defending every blade of grass, understanding that the game is never over. You know, I kind of made the comparison to NBA basketball. You know, most games come down to the last few minutes of the game. You know, it's all about which defense is playing better, which quarterback is playing better. So in the last few weeks, man, we feel like our defense stepped up in a huge way.
Kevin Byard joining us. All right, to that point, you called it, quote, probably the most extraordinary win I've ever been a part of. It was just a great thing, end quote. Now, you've been a part of some pretty big wins. What made that win so extraordinary, and can a win like that impact an entire team and change an entire season?
Yeah, it was just an awesome game, just all together, you know. I think the defense, we was playing well throughout the majority of the game and kind of the last 5 minutes of the game. You know, Phillip Rivers kind of got things rolling a little bit. And, I mean, if you look at the probability, when they was driving on the last drive and we got over to the one-yard line, I think we had about four or five plays on actually, like, inside the three-yard line. And, I mean, most people, I'm pretty sure if they was watching the game at home, they kind of cut the game off and kind of thought that we was going to lose. And, like I said, man, we just – As poised as the defense we are, we just kept saying that, you know, just keep defending, keep defending. We have another play. Just keep fighting. And Jarrell Casey was able to, you know, knock the ball out at the end, and Wesley Warrior picked the ball up, and the game completely flipped, and we ended up winning the game. So it was just an awesome moment for the Tennessee Titans in Nissan Stadium. The crowd was electric. It was just an awesome experience.
Kevin Byard is joining us once again. Now, you had an interception in Week 6 against the Broncos. That was your 15th career INT. That put you among the five fastest active players in league history to get to 15 interceptions. What do you remember about that play, and how does it feel to hit that milestone?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was one of those deals where, you know, I kind of think the tight end just lost the ball in the air. Kind of playing at Maha Stadium, you know, at that time, the sun was actually kind of directly in, like, the middle of the sky, so it was one of those deals where, like I said, I was kind of covering the tight end, and when the ball was in the air, the tight end kind of went, looked to his right shoulder, and then looked to his left, and I kind of knew, man, this guy lost the ball in the air. So as soon as the ball kind of hit the back of his nameplate, I kind of just stuck my hand out there, and the ball was able to stick, and I was able to bring it in and make the play. So, but it's just been awesome, man. I always felt like, you know, my ball skills was one of my strengths. I had 19 interceptions in college, kind of broke all the college records, or my college records, I would say. So, like I said, it's kind of my calling card. So, you know, I hope to get a lot more interceptions and help my team win games.
We're talking to Kevin Byard. Now, that interception was actually your fourth career pick against Joe Flacco. You tell me, is that a coincidence, or is there something about that matchup that you really like?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's a coincidence or anything like that. I just think that, like I said, it is one of those deals where I was able to make that play against him, and, you know, I played him the games before, caught two interceptions in the first time I played him, and caught pretty much an interception every time I played him. So, you know, I kind of got his number a little bit, so he kind of teased me a little bit at the end of the game. But, you know, like I said, it's just one of those deals where I just try to make a play every single game. That's kind of my mentality, going to every single game. Can I make a play a game, make an interception a game? And I don't know, man. You could say it was coincidence, but, you know, I just say I'm just kind of always prepared for the moment.
I was going to say, Kevin, like, I posed the question. I asked, is it a coincidence? But maybe there are no coincidences, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, like I said, that's kind of how it is. You always have to make sure that, you know, it's something that we always talk about as a DB, that just catch the ones they throw to you. You know, throughout the year, you're going to get a few opportunities, if not a lot of opportunities, to make a play on the ball. Some guys drop them. I try to be one of the guys that don't drop any.
You know, one of the things I appreciate you and your game is the fact that you're always willing to talk about other DBs and the guys you respect on other teams. Who are some of the guys that you do study whose games you do appreciate?
I mean, it's a lot of guys around the league. I think it's a lot of great safety play. Harrison Smith is one of the better all-around safeties in the league. I always watch Eric Weddle. I just like the way he plays the game. Jamal Adams is a guy I like. I love the way he plays. I love his aggressiveness. I love the passion that he plays with. Landon Collins is a guy I love to watch. It just counts the amount of guys. Tyrann Mathieu, there's a lot of guys that I actually watch weekly, kind of, you know, check them out, see how the game went, see the kind of different things that they're doing. So, like I said, I think it's a lot of good safety play in the league, and this is just an honor to be one of the guys. And also Earl Thomas, the guy who I've been looking at for a long time. So, like I said, there's a lot of good safeties I like to watch.
Yeah, I'll say it again. I really respect that you say that. Those are all great players, and I can see where you might do that, and I respect it, and I appreciate it. Kevin Byard joining us. Now, you and I have talked about your journey in the past, from Martin Luther King Jr. High School in Middle Tennessee to not getting invited to the Combine to an All-Pro. Over the summer, you became the highest-paid safety in the league. How much pride was there for you in signing that deal?
You know, it was one of those deals where it's like, you know, it was God's plan, man. It's one of those deals where I just kept my head down the entire time. Kept working, never really worried about, am I going to be the highest paid and different things like that. I just wanted to go out there and prove myself to my team first and then prove myself amongst the league that, you know, even though these guys didn't invite me to the combine, you know, I can play with these guys. I can be a big-time player. I always want to show great effort And also not only being great on the field, but being great in the community, doing those different things. So, you know, it was the biggest blessing. I was able to, like I said, to kind of secure my family. It's just a great thing. And like I said, when I got the contract and I did my press conference, the first thing I said was, and then I'm going to earn it. You know, nothing's really given. Everything is earned. So every single dollar, every year of my contract, I'm going to try to go out there and earn it and be the best player, be the best leader for my team that I can.
We're talking to Kevin Byard. You know, there's a lot in that I want to ask you about, but you mentioned the community. You're an all-pro. You're a captain. You're a star in the league now. You're the highest-paid safety in the league. But when it's all said and done, it's not about that. I think guys say it's not about that and don't necessarily mean it, like it sounds good. But when I hear you say that, I know that's the case. It's about what you do in the community. You just mentioned that and what you've done for others. Where does that mindset come from? Why is that so important to you?
Just understanding my background and understanding where I come from. When I was in high school and I was a younger guy, you know, it wasn't a lot of, I would say it wasn't a lot of pro athletes that came from my area. So I never really had the experience or the opportunity to go to different camps or for a guy to come back to my high school and talk to the team. But I also understand how much of an impact that would have made on me to understand, like, hey, this guy made it from my community. I can do those exact same things. So even just on Tuesday, I went to a high school with my mother. We ended up talking to the high school kids. Just give them just, you know, one word, one sentence could impact a guy's entire life. You know what I'm saying? Be able to give guys words of encouragement, just giving back to the community. I think those things matter more. When we're done playing football, the stats are all good, the All-Pros, the Pro Bowls, but the thing that's going to really mean more is how you was able to reach back and pull somebody else with you. And I think that's what it's really all about. It's all about bringing the guys, the younger generation, bringing them along.
Tennessee Titan Kevin Byard is my guest. And then you mentioned leadership. Like, you've been known as the mayor of Murfreesboro for quite some time, but now you are a captain of the Tennessee Titans. So what does that honor mean to you? And then how do you go about approaching being a leader?
I mean, it means a lot. I've been in this Middle Tennessee area for a long time. It's kind of like my home now. So I really appreciate all the support that I get from the fans, from just the entire community. And being a leader on a team or being a leader of a franchise, man, it's a huge honor, something I definitely don't take lightly. And I feel like, you know, with great responsibility, you know, with great, you know what I'm saying, those things, it becomes, you have to take it to the next level. So just being a leader of the team, I just try to do what I can to always make sure that I'm reaching out to everybody else. It's not about me. I mean, of course, being a leader, I always got to be doing the right things always, but at the same time, it's bigger than that now. I have to reach out to the younger guys, reach out to the rookies, kind of let them know and show them how to work. But at the same time, you know, everybody has different adjustments to the NFL, you know, try to help them out in any way possibly I can. And like I said, reaching out to people in the community and helping them out as well.
See, Kevin, the thing is, too, like, it's so important what you do and how you conduct yourself at the facility and even on the field, but it all starts at home, right? Like, for instance, your life changed dramatically. You and your wife have a new daughter, Ileana yeah. Rose Byard, who was born in August. What has fatherhood been like for you so far?
I mean, it's just been incredible. It's been the biggest blessing I've ever had in my life. You know, forget the contract. You know, me having my daughter has changed my life dramatically. You know, even just my schedule at home, coming home from practice, you know, you kind of shift your entire mentality that, you know, it's daddy mode now. I got to come home, be with my daughter. I get to feed her. I get to bathe her, change her diapers. You know, those type of things are priceless. So when I come home, I can never come home in a bad mood, you know, depending. Doesn't matter what happens in the facility. Doesn't matter what happened in the game. You know, I come home and I see her face. It just puts a big smile on my face. So it just makes me want to work even harder and keep doing the things that I'm doing because, like you said, you know, she's pretty much the heir to the throne is the way I look at it. So I got to make sure I'm doing everything right so she can be secure for the rest of her life.
She is the heir to the throne. That's great. All right, Kevin, so finally you've won two in a row. You're getting ready to face Carolina. From a defensive perspective, how do you go about, and I know you've got a lot of challenges, but how do you go about mm-hmm. preparing to shut down and deal with Christian McCaffrey? What's the key to keep him under wraps?
Yeah, I mean, Christian McCaffrey is 46% of their offense. So you have to go into the game and know where he's at all times. Now, I'm not saying that they don't have other great players. They have, you know, All-Pro tight end and Greg Olsen. They have Curtis Samuel. They have DJ Moore. You know, they have a lot of great players on their offense. But the offense runs through Christian McCaffrey. He's going to get probably 30-plus touches in this game. So it's one of those deals that understanding no matter what the call is, you know, where is 22? You know, how are they going to try to use him to find mismatches on our defense? So that's just one of those deals where, you know, and then also being a great tackler on this guy. I mean, most of the time when they use him in the pass game, he's not running – the full route tree, but, you know, when he gets the ball, he's breaking tackles, turning them into 50, 60-yard runs. So that's one of the deals. So definitely knowing where 22 is and being great tacklers all around on every single level and just getting off the field on third downs. When we get them into third and medium, third and long, we have to get off the field so this offense is not sustaining drives and scoring touchdowns.
So, Kevin, last thought, you mentioned the offense. You knew it was a matter of time before the offense got clicking, and it is right now. When you get both the units clicking at the same time, what's the ceiling? How good can your team be?
You know, we kind of talked about this earlier in the week. Well, this is a critical time in the season. You know, after eight games, you know, you have teams last year that was really good around this time, and then, you know, the last eight games kind of faltering and end up going, you know, having not a so great record, I would say. And then you also have teams that had a losing record at this time and end up having a winning record and going to the playoffs. So I think it's just one of those deals where our offense is clicking at the right time. You know, we wanted to be clicking at the beginning of the year, but the end of the year in November, December, you know, these make playoff teams. So if our offense keep clicking the way they're doing, our defense, we have to keep improving, get to the level that we were in the beginning of the year. Like I said, getting up the field on third downs, being better in the red zone, and just playing dominant defense. So, I mean, honestly, if we do those things, man, I think sky's the limit. You know, I think, you know, the Super Bowl isn't won in September. It is won in October. It's won in January and February. So it's one of those we have to keep improving. And, we'll see how it is. You know, you kind of look at the example of the World Series, the Washington Nationals. They didn't have a great record in the beginning of the year, and they end up winning the World Series. So, like I said, we just keep playing and keep improving.
Trade Pros, whether you specialize in service or new construction, Ferguson knows firsthand how much work goes into a hard day's work. This is why they're committed to offering the products and solutions that you need to get the job done right the first time, every time. With expert associates at more than 1,000 locations across the country and an unmatched selection of products, tools, and supplies, as well as same or next day delivery and their time-saving pro pickup service, you can trust that doing business with Ferguson will be the easiest part of your day. Remember, for projects and teams of any size and any scope, Ferguson has a winning game plan for contractors just like you. When the pressure is on, you can count on Ferguson. Visit Ferguson.com to find a location nearby. Trey Flowers is my guest. Trey, it's so good to have you on. How are you?
Good,
man. Great. Listen, I know you're focused on Oakland, but you were coming off a monster game against the Giants. Can I get your thoughts going into that game? The team was coming off some tough results. So what was the mindset of the team as you got ready for that game against the Giants?
Yeah, I mean, it was 1 week at a time. We understood that it was a long season. It was early in the season. So, and obviously, it was 3-game losing streak, things like that. So, but we just took it 1 game at a time. And, went out and prepared well, and, you know, we came out and executed on Sunday. So.
Trey Flowers, my guest. I'll say, you especially in the fourth quarter, you had a lead in the fourth. New York was driving. They get down to your 43-yard line. Then on first down, you have a sack and a forced fumble. New York gets the fumble. They drop back to pass again, and then you had a sack on second down. Take me back. What do you remember about that two-play sequence?
It was just understanding that situation football, obviously, you know, they was down in that fourth quarter. So, you know, just them having to run or making them run. I mean, not run, but pass the ball. So, understanding that and just, you know, getting your best pass rush or your best get off and, you know, knowing that. And, turned a good play into a great play. So I will ball, but unfortunately, they jumped on it. But, and so the next play, you know, I just continue to, you know that, you know, they were in an even tougher situation. So, you can get his back and you just, rush past it again. So,
Trey, on that first play, you went with a bull rush and a snatch, and then on the second play, you skipped the snatch, and you kept going with the bull rush. So as a pass rusher, how much of that is a game of chess between you and the tackle? For instance, are you planning those moves before the play, or is it all read and react?
Yeah, it's definitely a bit of a chess match. Obviously, you prepare yourself throughout the week and see, you know, how the offensive tackle, offensive lineman blocks, or how his head is, or how he shoots his hands and things like that. So you prepare going into the game, and then obviously, in the game you got to get a feel of it. If you hit him with, one move multiple times, obviously you're setting up, something else. So, you just got to play it to his match as such. So.
Trey Flowers joining us. Listen, the Lions official Twitter account recently had this great video of your high school highlights, which they posted with some commentary from you. On one of the plays, you dropped what you called your Palomalo move, where you're playing D-line and you dove over the heart of the offensive line. You sacked the quarterback. You forced a fumble. I would argue, though, Trey, that your version of the Palomalo was even tougher than his because he had a running start. You just elevated out of your stance. Yeah. What do you remember about that? What happened on that play?
You know, I just kind of timed up the snap, and, you know, obviously I wasn't in a position, so I was on the D-line, so, and I was just, I really just didn't work, you know, just try it out, being in high school, on TV, just trying to do it, and, I tried it out, and it didn't actually work. I wanted to get the fumble, but they jumped on it, but, you know, it was a cool little play.
Hey, man, you never know unless you try. You got to try, and it did work. Now, you're also blocking field goals. You're playing tight end. You made the point that if you liked offense a little more, you might have made a good tight end. What do you like about defense more than offense?
Just the physicality. Obviously, you know, it's a type of aggression you got to have, you know, going after the person with the ball. And I understand that aggression. So, you know, one of the things is about, I just know I couldn't be an offensive guy knowing guys like me trying to kill them. So, I'm better fit on the dark side just going after being a hammer, not the nail, so to speak. So, that's what I like more.
I like that, man. Better being the hammer than the nail. Trey Flowers joining us. So you won a pair of rings with the Patriots, and as I mentioned off the top, you are leading the league in postseason sacks the past 3 years. So in the offseason, you had a number of teams that were interested in you. What was it about the Lions that made you feel like that was the best fit?
Matt Patricia here, you know, coming from the Patriots, just the familiarity with him and just knowing that, you know, the mentality and the culture that, you know, he came from and he's trying to establish. You know, he's just one of those deals that, you know, I wanted to help him along the way. And, you know, him kind of helped me as well. So, you know, it was just a situation came up, time for a change. And, you know, and I just upset my.
Hey, Trey, as part of that change, like you've had a lot of success in the postseason, but now you're coming to a team that has not won a playoff game in a long time. So when you looked at that opportunity in Detroit, how much of that was about coming to help a team win, and then how much of that was coming to help guys learn how to win?
Yeah, it was definitely big. Obviously, you know, with my experience and things like that, just knowing what it takes as far as to win or to get to, you know, where every team want to be at the end of the year. You know, just coming and implementing that culture, I guess, that attitude that, you know, separates, you know, average teams from great teams. So, and obviously, you know, Matt Patricia understands that and, you know, likes to implement it. And, you know, I'm just here to help and here to help my team win as best as I can. So.
Just a couple of things before you go, because as part of your reputation, everywhere you've been, people rave about your work ethic. As an example, Brendan Daly, who coached with you with the Patriots, said, quote, Trey Flowers is one of the hardest working guys I've ever had the privilege to coach. You name it, he does it. He's in the building during days off. He's getting an extra workout in. He's studying tape. He's getting other guys to go with him after practice. You can talk with our community relations folks. I don't think he's ever said no to them. How much of this work ethic comes from your family and you getting started in the family construction business early on?
Yeah, it definitely taught me a lot. You know, like you said, I worked construction with my dad, and, you know, it was the summers wasn't an average summer for a, you know, 9-year-old kid. You had to go to sleep early and wake up early. You know, you get on top of buildings and put up walls, put up shingles, things like that. So, you know, it was just something that was implemented at a young age. Kind of fell in love with it, you know, just, you know, I talk about it all the time, just the feeling of coming home, the long days of work, getting a shower, getting a good meal from your mom, then going to sleep. That's, you know, that's what my whole summer was about. But, you know, you just kind of tend to like it. So, obviously, you know, me growing up in that environment obviously helped me and taught me a lot about hard work and, you know, hard work being results. And, you know, that's what I like to implement throughout my daily life. So.
It's the World Series! Wake up!
Wake up!
Wake up!
Wake up!
Welcome to the jungle, and a very good Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. You know I'm live, you know I'm in Southern California, and you know I'm hyped to be here. All right, so Monday morning, lots to talk about coming out of yesterday, such as...
Everywhere, such as...
Joe freaking Flacco.
Yeah!
Joe Flacco was ready to bleep some stuff up and take some chances late in the game, but apparently the Broncos coaches would not let him.
We're like afraid to go for it in a two-minute drill, and it just feels like we're kind of afraid to lose the game. It's third and five.
Are you going
to
tell me that guy's not elite? Oh, man, that was elite.
We're a 2-6 football team.
That was elite.
I'll just be brutally clear. Zero thought of throwing a football.
If you don't trust your quarterback and he's right not to trust him, then find somebody you do trust. Bench the Trubisky.
Bench the salt.
You understand me?
Vikings running back Alexander Madison is joining us. So you and Dalvin Cook really seem to feed off each other really well.
Oh, man. If you ever see us around, we're joking around with each other. It's a big brother, little brother relationship. It's awesome.
Rodgers tries to get rid of it, and it is caught. Touchdown,
Even Packers. At this juncture of his career, you know the guy's going to do something that you have never seen before, and he did it again right there.
That was incredible. Plays that kind of leaves you speechless.
And as good as that game would have been if Pat Mahomes was playing, I'm not sure it could have been any better. Charles Robinson joining us. All right, let me ask you about the Browns. What's your reaction when you hear Baker Mayfield say there is issue seems to be consistency, discipline, and a lack of accountability, end quote.
It's like the holy trinity of the spiral. You're talking about three things that all lean heavily on the coaching staff.
I mean, that's game five of the World Series. I've pitched through so much crap in my
career. We're all just a bunch of...
You've got a few whining little babies in this league.
I don't want to get touched. I want my 60 goals. I want my 60 goals. You're all just a bunch of...
I've pitched through so much... Crap.
They brought the house and they paid dearly for it.
I want to be aggressive. We can second guess a lot.
I'm going to second guess it, third guess it. I questioned it the second I saw that thing play out.
I don't have any regrets on the call.
That is an all-time terrible call.
Bad call.
The Red Rifle.
Red Ryder BB gun.
Is probably like, man, we're not good. Happy birthday to you. Thank you, everybody. And then out jumps Ryan Finley from the cave. Surprise! The job is mine. Give me the rock. That is cold-blooded. Richard Yergin.
I no longer had control of the wheel. When I think back on it now, you know, God took control of the wheel. Everything that happened, I walked out with no scratches and just a broken neck. I realized it could have been much worse.
So we knew each other when you were just getting started, and I'm really proud of you two, the way you have conducted yourself. I talk about the true good life and the work ethic and being there every day, and you're a perfect example of that. You've had to work very hard to get where you are right now, so I'm very proud of you.
If we was cavemen, I'd be the hardest caveman out there.
And I'm here for it. I don't care where Nate fights, who he fights, when he fights, or even that he's the underdog in this fight. If Nate Diaz is out there, I'd pay good money to see it.
I'm not surprised, mother.
Neil Olchek joining us.
I think for me going through this, even when I was at my darkest, I was at peace because everybody most important in my life knew how I felt about him. And that helped me get through.
The Washington Nationals are the world champions.
The Washington Nationals stayed in the fight, won the fight, and they did so by KO.
Dude, I gotta give mad props to the
Nats. We are joined again by Cliff Floyd.
It seemed like it was a little surreal for them at the moment. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. Well, they're the prime example of that one.
Hey, Head. Bad enough to be flossing up that $1,000 winner, but you're also looking for a day off? Bro, you currently work one day a week, and now you want that one day off.
JK's head looks like a big-ass thumb with hair.
And Matt, stop making jokes about Belly Clarkson, dude. You're fatter than Belly Clarkson. It doesn't make sense.
Being fat makes me the most qualified to crack on my fellow fat and ugly peeps, you chubby chaser.
You can't spell mangina without Manuel and Gardena.
Me and my Boston posse hanging out on yachts with chicks we score at the captain's parties in the Cheetah Lounge.
You scored with, quote, chicks, or you paid for those chicks?
Paid for.
Good to have you, Ron. How are you?
And this morning, I'm sitting here watching the best-looking sportscaster on TV radio, and let's face it, only Tiki Barber comes close.
Do I even need to say it? Rack him!
Touchdown! You know, most of the people saying this stuff are just, you know, people.
They're 8-0. They act like they're 4-4, and they're not looking for your respect. They're just going to come and rip it from you.
Feels great, baby.
Fight Clock is brought to you by... Oh, my God!
Burning.
Magical!
I was a mucker and grinder.
Every time I come in the kitchen,
I was great to be on the show.
Not one drop spilled.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Hey, did you know what?
Josh Red.
Goodness gracious.
Good night now!
Kurt Suzuki is my guest. Kurt, it's been a while. It's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Man, Kurt, there are so many things that I would like to talk to you about, but let me start right here. It's been about 36 hours since you won the World Series in Game 7. How is life right about now?
Oh, it's crazy, man. It's surreal. It's been a pretty busy 36 hours, that's for sure. I mean, you know, it's just surreal. I mean, it's a dream of as a kid is to be a World Series champion. I mean, especially, you know, once you get to the big leagues, it's like, I mean, that World Series, hoisting that trophy, playing the last game of the season, it doesn't get any better than this.
Well, not only that, but your journey to this point is absolutely amazing, and I'll get to that in a minute. But after the road that you've taken to get here, does it feel the way you thought it would? I mean, is it sinking in still, or does it feel the way you thought it would feel?
You know, I don't think it even sunk in yet. I mean, don't get me wrong. I sit around every time at night once the kids go to sleep, and I talk with my wife, and I say, man, we're world champions. Like, can you believe it? I mean, it's like, unbelievable. I mean, you watch teams celebrate. I mean, I've been in the big leagues for 13 seasons, and every year it's been you watch teams celebrate, and you just kind of think about how they feel right now. And now being in that position right now, it needs time to settle in because it's been such a whirlwind, such a grind of a season, but you know, don't get me wrong, it's a great feeling.
Kurt Suzuki is joining us. You know, I'm going to skip ahead of that because you mentioned your wife. If we were to go back, you walked on. You walked on at Cal State Fullerton. Your wife, Renee, who was a volleyball player at Cal State Fullerton, and the two of you have your kids, and you've been living the Major League Baseball life for quite some time, but there's the mental grind, right, of being away from the baseball. There's the physical grind from the family. There's the physical grind of being a catcher. And, Kurt, the story goes that at one point during the 2016-2017 season, you thought about retiring, and she was very hard on you, you said. She was like, what are you doing? What do you remember about that time? What did she say, and what kept you at it?
Yeah, it was, I mean, you know, like you said, it's a grind, man. And, you know, being away from your family and, you know, not being a father or a husband, you know, for – what, 8 months of the season, it's really hard. And that 2016 season, I just finished up with the Twins, my last year with the Twins. And, you know, heading into that offseason, I think I was about 2 months shy of 10 years in the big leagues. And, you know, it was a while. I mean, no offers, no interest, nothing. And I'm just kind of sitting around at home. And I just said, okay, this might be it, you know. And I was kind of okay with it, you know. It's like, you know, I just want to be home with the kids and all this kind of stuff. It was a rough couple years, you know, my wife, you know, health-wise with the baby and all that kind of stuff. And we finally got the call, and, you know, my agent told me that, you know, Atlanta has offered us a contract to be in the major leagues. And I told my agent, I remember this vividly, I said, is it even worth it to go out there and be away from my family? And he's like, what do you mean? And he's like, listen, you decide what you want to do and let me know. So I called him back later after talking to my wife. She said, what are you doing? She said, your goal was to get to 10 years in the big leagues. You're 2 months shy. You have an offer, a chance to put on a major league uniform, and you're going to say no? She goes, we'll be fine. She goes, trust me, we'll be fine. Take the offer. Get your 10 years. We'll be fine. And I remember calling him. I said, we're going to do it. And we went. And, I mean, that was probably the best year of my career numbers-wise. And led to another year with Atlanta to the playoffs, and then led to a 2-year deal here with Washington. Now I'm a World Series champ, and, you know, my wife should deserve all the credit for that because I was that close to retiring, and she made me go back, and now I'm a World Series champ.
What a great story that is, Kurt. In fact, when you started that off, when you said that you were sitting with your wife after this went down, and we just said, we are World Series champions, we are world champions, I could see where you would describe it like that because she had such a prominent role in that. Kurt Suzuki is my guest. That's amazing. So when you look at this team, like from the outside looking in, the way you guys interact, the way you guys pick each other up, the way you celebrate home runs, it seems like the chemistry in that clubhouse is absolutely amazing. You've been around the game your whole life. How special is that clubhouse? How would you describe the attitude inside that room?
Oh, man. It was probably the best atmosphere clubhouse-wise that I've ever been a part of. I think we had so many veteran guys, I think, that we're almost embracing that role of nowadays you don't see a lot of old guys in the game. You know, it's a lot of they turn to a lot of young guys. And, you know, once you get 31, you're past your prime and all this kind of stuff. And we were embracing that and we were enjoying it. And, you know, I think that, you know, bringing guys like Parra in, Rodney in, Asdrubal Cabrera, and like, those guys have been around for a long time, have been through the ups and downs, and understands the grind of a game and keeping the clubhouse loose. It was awesome to mix in with the young guys we had, the Sotos, the Robleses, the Turners, those type of guys. It was just a good mix, and you know, obviously in the beginning of the year we started off slow and a lot of new faces, and we were still kind of trying to find ourselves, click, and we were unhealthy, like a lot of guys are hurt, and we just kind of stayed with it, and we understood that there's going to be a time where we all click, and then we're just going to take off, and we did, and it was just, after that, it was, I mean, you saw, I think we had tied for the best record in baseball since middle of May, and it was phenomenal.
Kurt Suzuki is my guest. Again, Kurt, there's so many things I could talk to you about, but we're going to run out of time. But I want to ask you this. You suffered that strained right hip in Game 3, and you were going to play in Game 7, but before the game, your hip did not respond the way you'd want it to, and you told Dave Martinez that you couldn't play. It was one of the most unselfish things that I've ever seen, really, in sports. When Max Scherzer heard that you couldn't go, he came to you and he said, quote, "I love you. You've been instrumental for me all year. I've got this for you." Then Gomes said to you, "I'm going to take care of this for you." What did it mean for you to hear that from them, and then how much were you able to help them prepare for the game?
It was kind of the story of our season. You know, it wasn't about one person. It was about all of us, and we picked each other up all season. Whoever's name got called, you did the job. And that game right there, I was doing all this treatment. My hip was just getting crushed by the trainers just trying to get me on the field. We were doing everything we could to get me on the field, and it just wasn't responding. I just needed time off, and I wasn't about to put myself out there in a situation like Game 7 when I got 25 other guys in that locker room trying to win a World Series, and I'm going to, because of my ego, I want to play Game 7 and go out there, potentially cost the team the game because I just want to be out there when I wasn't 100%. It just didn't feel like the right thing to do. I wouldn't have been able to look myself or my teammates in the mirror, in the eyes, after that if something happened. And I just went in. I made that decision with the training staff, and Max came in and we shared a moment together, and he said, "I got this, bro." And Jan came in too and said, he said, "Zook, you know, we love you like a brother, man." He said, "We're going to take care of this." And we all collaborated and created this game plan, and I watched this game tentatively. And, I mean, they did such a phenomenal job of grinding through that game. It was such a fun part to be a part of. It was awesome.
Incredible. Kurt Suzuki joining me for another moment or so. So you've been around the game so long, Kurt. You've seen some amazing performances. When you consider that Scherzer couldn't even dress himself a few days earlier and then's out there grinding his way through more than 100 pitches without his best stuff, how impressive was that, and how do you explain that?
Nothing surprises me with this guy. Competed against him for 10 years. Now to be able to be on his side and see what he does to prepare himself, how he prepares himself, how he competes out there every single day, it's nothing surprises you on why he's a three-time Cy Young Award winner, all these all-stars, no hitters. It doesn't surprise you what he does because of the competitor he was. And when his neck was hurt, he couldn't even move. This guy, I saw him, he couldn't even move. And I said, man, he's done. He's done for the year. And just talking to him, I had this inkling that, man, he's going to come back. I said, he might look like this, but he's going to rise from the dead, and he's going to come back and pitch. And sure enough, Game 6, after the game, he said, "Get me to Game 7, I'm playing." And I said, "What?" He said, "I'm pitching Game 7, let's go." And I was like, boys, we win this game, we're winning the World Series. And Strauss went out there and just unbelievable, just dealt, was unbelievable. Once we won that game, we were so confident going into Game 7. It was awesome.
He did rise from the dead. So, Kurt, when you're in a situation like you were and you weren't necessarily offensively doing the things that you wanted to do, although you'd always had success against Justin Verlander, to jumpstart your team the way you did by jumping ship, what did that mean to you? What did that feel like?
Oh, it was what a great feeling. I was joking around. I said, let's see how many games we can win. If we can win the World Series and I can get zero hits in the whole postseason.
Wow.
I mean, jokingly saying that, but kind of serious. But at the same time, they're like, hey, man, you keep putting up zeros. That's all we care about. And I just came up in that moment. I said, just do something to help the team win. Like, please. And, you know, I got a pitch to hit and I hit it. And it's been so long since I barreled up a ball like that, it felt like, that when I hit it, I couldn't even believe it. And it, when it went out, I was running the bases in shock. Like, I just hit a home run in the World Series to put my team up in the seventh. And it was such an unbelievable feeling. It was awesome.
Dude, you're the best. Really quickly, I'm in the area, Kurt, so I understand what it means to play at Cal State Fullerton. Like, both my kids play travel ball, high school baseball in this area, and there's coaches all over the area from Cal State Fullerton. I got about 60 seconds. You are a world champion right now, but what did it mean to you to represent the Titan family, too, and to play your ball there?
Oh, it's the best. Titans, you know, once you're a Titan, you're always a Titan. And I talk to all my teammates, coaches. I still talk to them on a daily basis. These guys, we all keep in touch. We're a family, and to me, it's the number one college team in baseball because of that. It's not just winning championships. It's about family, and you come together as a family. And it was an awesome experience and something I'll never forget.
Kurt Suzuki, dude, that could not have been a better conversation. Kurt, I appreciate you very much. Congrats. You earned it. What a great way to share that with our audience, too. Kurt, thank you very much, man.
All right. I appreciate it, man.
That was great, Kurt. Really good.
Good night now.